Hello there, and welcome to the Comic Book Tesseract, a weekly comics netcast that's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. I'm Justin Chalupka, alongside Jason Polyev. Every week, we review and preview the world of comics, along with other facets of geek chic culture. We were looking at the list before we got started, and holy whatever other expletive. I was going to go with that. I was trying to find some other, like, expletive that wasn't expletive, but.
Holy donuts, Batman.
Regardless, we have a lot of shared books this week.
Yeah. So we're not going to be able to cover half of them.
Yeah. I mean, we've gone through and we decided, okay, you know what? This stuff wasn't worth going through. This stuff is worth going through. And even as it is, we still got a pretty significant stack here.
What the bonus is we looked at it and goes, okay, this is just a continuing good story and shoved it aside. If it was something bad, we're probably going to talk about it.
Yeah. So, it's almost kind of a detriment in a way too, because there are things that are good that I'm sure we would like to talk about, but we just, it's
having
too much.
So much come out this week. Yeah. We had a lot of overlap, which it's great for us to discuss, but.
It's something like 15 books that we shared. I mean, that's not even going into the stuff that we don't share.
Yeah. Well,
let's go ahead.
Rather than discuss how much we had to read, let's go ahead and jump right in.
Yeah, we might as well get started. Okay. Let's start with action. Because
action. Okay.
This one,
part to start superhero comics with.
Well, I thought so. You picked it up this week. I didn't. I had dropped action from my list because I wasn't happy with where it was going, with what it was doing. I grabbed your issue on Wednesday, read through it, shoved it in your face and said, read this.
Yes, and I had to then sit down and read it straight through. Stop what I was doing.
Because there is some interesting stuff going on in this book that, quite frankly, I didn't see coming.
Such as
Clark Kent being dead.
Yeah, it does kind of put a damper on things. Yeah.
Well, and what's confusing me on this is that in Superman, we've seen Clark as Clark acting in the world.
So how does he come back? And the other thing is this does quite a bit of jumping between the 5 year ago when he was still wearing the t-shirt costume and the present time where he's back, where he's wearing the Kryptonian suit that we're told in the first arc of action.
Right.
So this apparently takes place in the middle of that first arc when he first moves into the apartment and when he finally gets the suit.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's something more going on here. But it's not very good at explaining out what that is, because we know continuity wise, this can't just be a, you know, drop it on them and yeah, this is what it is. Screw all the rest of your continuity. Although that does seem kind of very Grant Morrison in flavor to do something like that.
Yeah. He wants to tell just a fun story and he's actually even screwing with his own continuity by jumping the story back and forth.
Yeah.
And making it difficult to tell. Are you in the past or are you in the current with this comic?
It's like Final Crisis all over again.
but not nearly as bad.
I was gonna say, but non-shitty this time.
Yeah, it actually works quite well with the story going on here.
And despite the possible continuity issues, what's really good about this book is that it's a very emotional book for this issue, and I really, really liked it. I mean, this is like on the verge of making me put this back on my list thinking I made a mistake, but I'll wait until I see what Morrison does next month. If it continues and it's actually really good, then you know what? I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I'll put it back on my list, but I don't know. I'm wondering if this was just, you know, the random good job. Like he hit the nail on the head with this particular issue, but I don't know if he's going to hit it again because I know I've traditionally not particularly cared for his writing. So, you know, maybe this will be the thing that turns me around. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I definitely have had a hard time with, you know, Morrison's writing. There's some times when I absolutely adore what he's doing. There are times when I just don't understand it and I don't feel the story that he's been putting out there for us to read. Mm-hmm. I'm really looking at what he's doing with action here and liking it. I also like it a lot better than the first arc, at least so far.
Well, yeah.
I could say that for most of the DC books. Their second arcs, those that have already gone into a second arc, or those that
have been moving
into the third arc. Well, the second arcs have been stronger.
Not across the board, obviously. I mean, there are a lot of books that never made it to their second arc. There's a lot of books that are starting off their second arc with an added anchor around their ankles.
Yeah. I think Grifter is one of those books.
Yes, it is. Let's see. The other ones would also be Savage Hawkman and
Deathstroke.
Yeah, thank you. I was trying to think of the other one.
So, Yeah, well,
not only with the weight around their ankles, but also a distinct lack of neck and elbows. Speaking of other things that are kind of incomprehensible, let's talk about GI Combat a little bit and the War That Time Forgot. Oh, actually, let's not talk about the War That Time Forgot because I don't think
it. You didn't read that.
No, well, I didn't read it and I have no plans to read it and I don't even know why it's in that book, to be perfectly honest.
Okay. So.
I mean, when it comes down to guns versus dinosaurs, I'm pretty sure I know what wins. Dinosaurs weren't bulletproof, not until the dinosaurs.
Well, it also depends on, you know, how many bullets you have.
Yeah, I mean, you get the Resident Evil kind of, ammo conservation thing going on, sure. But you can eventually start, you know, making varying degrees of lethality other things while defending yourself with the weapons you have.
You know, if this was like a 2 or 3 issue mini, I could probably get behind reading it.
Maybe.
But trying to stretch this out, I mean, they open up the book with showing you the main character back with his wife and maybe a little bit of visual hint that she might be pregnant. But, right. So he wants to get back to her and it's not.
What is with that last panel where they both different. Look like they're about to, like, suck in their last breath?
It's longing for each other.
No, longing for each other is done with the eyes, not with mouths agape like you're trying to catch a frickin' fly.
Well, so they're trying to breathe some emotion into these characters, trying to get you to care about them.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Trying to breathe some emotion into these characters, trying to get you to care about them. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, there's nothing there for me to care about.
Yeah, I don't care about these people.
And so seeing them fight dinosaurs. Okay. Yeah, that's cool. It makes a great sci-fi Saturday afternoon matinee.
Yeah. No, you know what? Make one of these, like the VC guys that are there with them. Start doing like some ninja kicks to the head of the dinosaurs, then I'll be impressed. Until then, don't care.
No,
the real reason people pick up this book is Unknown Soldier.
Well, that, at least for us, that's the reason. Yeah, I'm sure there are people that pick this up because they want to see dinosaurs.
Oh no, I'm willing to egotistically spread that out amongst the entire world. Nobody's picking up this book for anything other than Unknown Soldier. Because I think, quite frankly, it's the only thing in this book that's worth a damn.
Okay, so we've got Unknown Soldier and yeah.
Which, I should preface that I love the Vertigo Unknown Soldier.
Yeah, well, the most recent Vertigo incarnation of the Unknown Soldier. Unknown Soldier's been around for a while.
Yeah, but when he was around before, he was previously DC. Okay. Not in Vertigo. The original Unknown Soldier was a World War II soldier that's much closer to, the version that is currently being portrayed in GI Combat.
Okay.
This is much more similar to, what it was, you know, guy gets scarred up. Gets trained up and is just this military badass. Pretty straightforward kind of, you know, explanation. This one obviously has a few more modern interpretations as far as it, you know, teching them up a little bit.
Yeah, and they do. That's what the first half of this story is, which made me go, "Why am I reading this?" Is they're teching up the character, and that's not what I wanted. A badass soldier. I didn't want RoboCop. This
right
with bandages on his face. They actually do a much better job of showing you some of the personal demons that this character has.
Yeah. And how he's not exactly on this, you know, middle kilter here. Yeah,
he has a psychosis and he definitely acts out.
Which that is a bit of a hallmark for the character as well. That has always been in and definitely was in, like you said, the most recent Vertigo run, which I've said it before. I will say it again. Go out, find the trades, read them thoroughly. Especially with the big Kony 2012 thing that just happened recently, because the most recent Unknown Soldier is set in Acholiland, which is part of Uganda, which is and he's fighting against Kony's LRA. The
Vertigo was set in Acholiland. Mm-hmm. Now this one apparently is going to be set all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
They're setting up they're finishing actually the introduction to the character, because the first one we find out the background of the character as a soldier.
Yes.
This one we find out a little bit of his personal life, why he's running away and doesn't care about his having a personal life anymore because he's lost it.
Right.
And
which this I will say is actually different from previous incarnations, whereas you never really, I mean, when he was an unknown soldier, he was completely unknown. You knew nothing about his past, nothing about his family, nothing about
anything. We still don't know really who he is. We just know he's had these nightmares. What they show us is through nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of this first half of this story in this issue is him being turned into a Steve Rogers-esque super soldier.
Right.
Bit more modern nanotechnology type stuff going on there. And for me, that was a disappointment. But as they start setting up what his first mission is going to be as the revamped unknown soldier.
And this is sort of like
get a little bit interesting.
And the mission they put him into is, or the trial run they do during this issue is not exactly a light op. I mean, it's pretty heavy duty, and this is just his training run. So you got to hope that they're actually going to be, you know, cranking up the action a bit more with the things to come. And it looks like if they can do it, it'll be phenomenal.
Yeah, it certainly looks like, yeah, it's Palmiotti and Gray that are writing The Unknown Soldier.
And, which is a great team.
Yeah. And what they're putting in there is certainly going to make it look like it's going to kick ass. And, you know, if this is just a training run, the stuff that they've got planned, I think, and knowing them, they've got it planned and they know just how dangerous and.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, you start to run into that land of hyperbole of just how big and majestic is
it going to get?
Does it go beyond where it becomes an entertaining story and just kind of goes, okay.
Well, and the big push with the new 52 is that they said they wanted to make things much more action focused. So it definitely makes sense that they want, I mean, they're hitting the mark as far as high action on this. But yeah, you're right as far as amping it up and having it become not too actiony, but too unbelievable, where the suspension of disbelief kind of gets blown out of proportion. Right. So.
Okay.
I see you're flipping through, something else there.
World's Finest, which we'd actually, we're originally going to skip this, but it reminded, but while we were, talking, reminded me of a point that happened in this book that made me go, wait a second. DC doesn't even understand their own continuity in the new 52.
Well, we've already discussed that. I mean, we know that's the case.
Well, they've continued to point this out to us.
Yeah.
We know that, you know, based on what happened in Earth's Finest Number One, or World's Finest Number One, that Kara and Helena show up.
Or right, Helena whatever, because changed Helena her name again.
Well, Helena Wayne, she had been portraying Helena Bertinelli for a little while.
Right.
They show up 5 years ago, and it actually shows 5 years ago with them on the beach burning their old costumes, or trying to burn Power Girl's old costume.
Right.
As they get ready to, you know, assimilate into the new world.
Which I just realized, where did she get the bikini?
Then.
The unitard is probably part of the uniform now that I think about it.
Anyway, they then show 58 months ago, which would be 2 months later.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 months after the 5 year ago mark, they're showing them discussing the Justice League fighting off Darkseid.
Right.
Well, if that's 2 months, Action Comics was supposed to have taken place at the 5 year ago mark. That's right. When Detective was supposed to take place. When we're first getting introduced to.
Well, remember, Justice League was a couple of years before.
No, but Superman shows
action.
Up.
Right.
Action. Batman shows up shortly thereafter. Now, they have said Batman was operating from the shadows before then.
Right.
But he did just make his public appearance in Detective, which was at the 5 year ago mark. They were sitting on the beach burning their costumes at the 5 year ago mark. So were the heroes only around for 2 months when all of a sudden we got Green Arrow, Wonder Woman?
Do we know for certain that this is actually at the 5 year ago mark when they were on the beach?
It says right there in the top right left-hand corner, 5 years ago.
Okay, I'll take that as a yes.
With them on the beach. It then says 58 months ago, which would be 2 months after the 5 year ago mark.
Eh, semantics.
When they're discussing Darkseid getting beaten by the Justice League. So it means the Justice League formed in 2 months after the initial appearance of Superman and Batman, which seems like they're really compressing that timeline. Like,
yeah.
Superman shows up, then Batman, Aquaman, Green Lantern, Flash,
Wonder Woman.
Yeah. All of that occurs right in that, in 2 months.
It's actually kind of funny that you mentioned that because, I'm reading Stormwatch, which I know you aren't. And they actually mention in Stormwatch that there's just this absolute explosion of meta activity on the planet. And part of what Stormwatch is trying to do right now is figure out what the hell is causing this. Why are they all popping up right now at the same time? So there is that compressed timeline, but I think it's being done on purpose, not necessarily them just,
But it's interesting because the way they had originally laid it out, it was like, Superman and Batman show up. Three years or so after that, you've got the Justice League formed because the other heroes have shown up.
Right.
And then, 2 years after that, you've got the current continuity where everything else is taking place and the rest of the heroes have popped in.
But we're seeing more and more that's occurring outside of what they had originally deemed the current continuity.
I think they're still a bit fuzzy on their own continuity when they're putting a lot of this together. And so in some places, I think they're kind of winging it, and I don't think they quite thought it through entirely. Mm-hmm. Maybe they have, and, you know, maybe Braganza will get around to actually publishing his timeline on the DC website.
I'm not holding my breath.
No.
Well, right, but we brought World's Finest, let's go ahead and let's talk about Earth 2, which came out this week as well. Earth 2, we finally see, the introduction of Jay Garrick as the Flash. We see the much media touted, relationship between Alan Scott and, his boyfriend Kyle, which was...
We don't get to see the Green Lantern, though, which is one of the interesting points in
although this. Although it is the final page thing is next the Green Lantern. So we'll see that next month.
And, yeah, the other thing that we also get to see is the Hawk Girl.
Which is very interesting.
It's going to be interesting to see because as one of the things that's done through the exposition that spent way too much time in creating the Flash was that the metas are gone. There are none. Yeah. He's just a regular person.
So we know.
So apparently Hawk Girl is around. Now, how they're going to explain that is still yet to be done. Maybe they'll be explaining that along with the Green Lantern origin, you know, of how he actually gains his powers in the next issue.
It's possible. Or I wonder if Earth 2 is having the same, maybe they are having like a second spring type of thing. Like all the metas showed up and then the Darkseid invasion killed off all the metas and now they're having, you know, a new crop, so to speak, of
metas
popping up.
Well, it certainly is having a new crop of metas popping up. It's interesting if they're going to reveal if there is something behind it, which there seems
another,
to be indications
a unifying
of that.
Cause.
Now, aside from the politics that covered this book, and the characters that are showing up, I thought it kind of got mired in the "I'm just a regular person, I can't do enough," and you know, Mercury finally pushing the powers onto him. I felt that they dug too deep into that. It kind of froze the book in place for a book featuring the Flash. I didn't like the pacing of this. It wasn't fast enough. Now, once he got the powers and they start showing him playing with it and trying to figure out what his powers are and how they work.
Right.
That was fun.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he runs halfway around the world not realizing it.
Yeah. Just saying, okay, let's see where I can go. And, oh, look, I ended up in, what'd you say, Poland, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
There's some interesting things. Yeah, Robinson's a great writer. I'm really interested in where he's going to go with this as he reveals these origins. And I think actually we're going to be at a weaker first arc because he's got to introduce all of these characters.
Right.
Give us, for the most part, origins to all of them.
And the one thing we haven't seen yet in Earth 2, being two books into the first arc, is any type of true villainy.
Well, no villainy, but there is a hint of who a villain might be, and that's actually the other character that's going to be part of the Justice Society that shows up at the beginning of this book, Mr. Terrific, who actually the book starts on him arriving on Earth 2, which it's actually the same Mr. Terrific from Earth 1 that's told in the 8 issues that his comic run lasted as part of the New 52.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go back, pick up those 8 issues or the trades and find out, you know, where he came from. And, you know,
which I have to admit, the idea of the crisscrossing Earths does quite interest me. Like that kind of intrigues me as far as, okay, what are they going to do between these two existences?
Yeah, I like that idea. Yeah. And, you know, they've kind of, you know, DC's staying with that 52 number. So there's going to be 52 universes. Mm-hmm. We're only seeing the two. Now these are going to be the primary two they'll be bouncing back and forth from.
Right.
But it also opens it up for us to be able to see other things such as Superman Red Sun, where he lands in Russia and is raised as Russian.
Yeah, the Elseworld stuff that's always been kind of ignored before.
Well, not always, because they actually made that part of continuity as one of the 52 Earths.
Right.
So they may bring that aspect back into it. We may or may not see that. So.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever actually see a full integration of all the 52s. A lot of the Earths, even from the previous continuity, never had any definition, and Wildstorm was a world unto itself, and now that's been merged into Earth 1, so...
And we'll discuss just how fully Wildstorm's been merged in.
Yeah.
We've seen it before, like with Grifter interacting with Green Arrow.
Yes.
And crossing over there. you know, Stormwatch is a Wildstorm title that's been brought in. Static is actually a Milestone character that's been merged into the DC universe.
So, I mean, there's lots of them out there. And the, what I find interesting, it, well, even I said, not necessarily for what's interesting, but I have no doubt we're going to see a lot more of this come out during the Trinity War, which is going to be their next big
arc
thing. Yeah. Yes. It, that's going to be the next big, you know, universe spanning, spanning. Universe spandex.
Universe expanding. Awesome. Well, it is superheroes. There's plenty of spandex around.
That is true.
Okay. Yeah, it's... All right. With this, shall we go ahead and discuss...
Let's...
Detective and get rid of all the DC comics that we have?
Yeah. And, yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Okay. So, this is a great jumping on point for Detective Comics beginning a new arc. This is after the Night of Owls arc. And... it's introducing Mr. Toxic as the villain. So I enjoyed the story. Yeah, this is Ed Bennis on art. They're giving Tony Daniel a breather from being the artist and the writer on this. Tony's just writing it, which I think has really helped the book because this story is much stronger than it's been previously.
Yeah. Which I'm a little bit bummed that we're starting the second arc of Detective. We've been through an arc and an event in the whole Bat book universe, we still have not seen anything of Joker.
They're keeping him hidden for a reason.
I know, but for as heavily dropped as he was at the premiere, to have him just totally disappear, I can understand, like, they want him to go to the back of people's minds. They want people to kind of forget him about him a little bit.
Well,
so that way when they do bring him back out, it'll be the return of the Joker, dun dun dun.
Well, there's been a whole thing of the Joker is overused. Anytime Batman fights a villain and you want it to be somebody big, mean, and nasty, it's the Joker, because he's the
opposite. Big, mean, and nasty.
And they want to say, look, Batman's got a huge gallery of rogues other than the Joker.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the things that made The Dark Knight, or sorry, not The Dark Knight, Batman Begins such a great movie, is the Joker wasn't in there.
Right.
It wasn't, yeah, whereas with the, you know, every Superman movie has had Lex Luthor in it.
Right.
Yeah. This, you know, they finally said, you know, we don't need Batman to be defined by the Joker. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they've said, we're going to take him, we're going to shove him in a closet, let him marinate and stew, and when we bring him back out, he's going to be as big, mean, and nasty as he ever has. But we're going to display some of the other Bat villains. We're going to let you see, you know, just who Batman fights and just how nasty they can be. But there are others that we haven't really seen. You know, we may have kind of caught glimpses of characters, but, you know, Killer Croc hasn't been around.
Riddler hasn't been around.
Penguin, they've been dealing with and having him hide out in places.
Well, Penguin has been in and out. He's back as sort of like a criminal kingpin in a way.
Yeah. And actually, if you read Batwing this week, he's back. He's playing that kingpin role in Batwing as well.
Well, cause he was in the previous Detective books, there was the whole thing that happened at the Iceberg Lounge. Which...
Yes. So, I mean, Penguin's been around, but there are other, you know, again, the Riddler we haven't seen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Two-Face is actually the backup story for Detective as they're laying that out. We also have had...
That one's, it was a, as far as backup stories go, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Not as good as some of the other ones that have been in Detective so far, but not bad.
Yeah. And...
Oh, that was something else I was going to mention. Wasn't it Action that was having the Shazam side stories?
No, Justice League.
Okay, that's why. All right.
Yep, that's why. Yeah. So, Action has had some backup stories going on in it.
Mm-hmm.
It had it in this issue,
but it went along with
The
actual main story. So,
yeah, it had the story of Steel.
Right.
So you got a feel for the character of Steel going on in it. With Detective, they've definitely come out of the gate strong with this arc. So if you were interested in Detective, it'd be a great place to jump on.
Yep.
And yeah, plus you get to see a whole bunch of Batman. Yeah.
Well, a whole lot of Batmen.
Yeah. A lot of Batmen. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's leave it at that.
Five or six of them in there, I think.
Yeah. That's all we need to say.
All right. What do you got next?
Next up, let's see. If we're already out of DC, let's go on some of the indie stuff before we hit up Marvel. Let's talk about some of the number ones from this week.
Right.
Harbinger.
Harbinger. Valiant. Summer of Valiant.
Yep, this is their number 2 title that they came out with.
Man of War number 2 came out this week. We both really enjoyed that as well. So
just a quick
review of that.
Yeah,
back on Harbinger.
I find the story and the plot for this to be intriguing. This is a very interesting book and an interesting character. You have a young man who seems to have some type of a mental, a telepathic cognizance, who's hanging around with his buddy, who is a diagnosed schizophrenic, who also hears voices. The only difference is the voices that he hears aren't real. The voices in the main character's head is the voices of everybody around him. But they both take the same.
And understands this.
Right. But they both take the same meds to make the voices stop.
Yeah. Well, but also, yeah, the character understands. Yeah. He takes the medicine to make the voices stop. His schizophrenic friend doesn't want to take the medication.
Right.
Which is
pretty common.
Uncommon.
Yeah.
Not going to say it's very common, but it's certainly not unheard of with patients that are on psychiatric medication. They do go off their meds.
Well, because they take their meds, they feel better, they think, oh, I feel great, I must not need it anymore, they stop taking it, and off they go to Looney Land.
Or they take it, they go, oh, I feel so disconnected, I'm
Oh, yeah,
not
or under
myself.
A cloud, and, yeah.
So, this is another one that starts off at another time and place, mm-hmm. which, being that this-
It seems like the Harbingers exist throughout history as different individuals, so it almost kind of a Avatar- Like
not quite, because this shows us a person with the same powers of the Harbinger mm-hmm. that actually has a better understanding of what the Harbinger can do, but he knows he shows up in a temple, and then he shows up at the end of this book,
right?
Yeah, and he actually shows up throughout the book,
which I don't know if I want to talk about that character, because I did go and look this up after I read the book, because I was curious about it, and I revealed something about that character that I don't think I should get into, but the guy who is teaching him, who's basically going to be mentoring him, it seems in this book, has a lot more going on with him. He'll be a much deeper and more interesting character as the story develops. So it'll be worth watching and keep an eye on. And I would say this entire book is going to be worth watching and keeping an eye on.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying this story. There's a lot going on in here.
It's well paced. It's slow where it needs to be slow. It's actiony where it needs to be actiony. It
has moments where it's a little bit trippy. It has moments where...
Well, which you're dealing with a character that has...
You're dealing with...
Mental powers. So that sort of trippiness is to be expected.
And you've also got, his friend who's schizophrenic, mental condition. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot going on here. And I love the way that it's all fitting together. Mm-hmm. And it just sits there and builds intrigue and suspense.
Yeah. And this... I would say this book is starting off at a great simmer. Like, the boiling is just starting. You know it's going to be hot. The steam is starting to rise, but you can see that the full boil is coming. And it's all you got to do is just sit there, and it almost makes you want to look away from the pot so it'll boil, so you can just get to the good stuff. But you can't. You can't look away. You got to sit there and wait for it to finish stewing. Get everything going, and then the next thing you know, it'll be blown up in your face.
I have to say, the Valiant books that have come out so far, all three of them, two titles.
They've been heavy hits.
Yeah. They know what they're... Now, to be fair, mm-hmm. they are definitely retreading the original arcs and stories for these characters.
Which I think is smart, because Valiant, although it was...
It's been a long time since they've been around.
It's been a long time, and even when they were out, they obviously were not at the top of the game.
Well, they got huge for a while.
They got huge, but not top of the game. You're not going to be able to talk about Valiant characters in the same way that you can talk about Marvel and DC characters. Those characters are part of pop psyche. I mean, they are in the zeitgeist. The Valiant characters are not, by any stretch of the imagination.
But there are areas where they do pop out. And Bloodshot and Turok. You see them.
Well, they Shadow Man as well. They crossed over into the video game arena.
Right.
But for a very brief blip. So people that were into comics, into video games, into that scene, yes, they would notice them and see them. But go to talk to your mother about them. Your mom knows who Superman is. She's not going to know who Ninjak is.
Well, the average mom. There are some moms out there that do read comics.
Fair enough. Fair enough. That's why I said your mom, because I know your mom, and I know that she damn well knows who Superman is.
Yes. So, these Valiant books, they've done a great job. Now, whether they'll be able to, but part of you know, being retreading those stories is they've got a lot of material to work with. They can mm-hmm. go, this worked originally, this didn't, take what did, throw out what didn't, try some new stuff.
Well, the other thing too is that because they had this large stable, a lot of people have questioned, why did you pick those four titles to be the four that you guys are going to launch with? And that whole discussion actually, is talked about in the Bleeding Cool magazine that came out this week. This is a zero issue, and it's actually a short issue. It's only $1.49. It's $1.50 at your comic shop. The next one to come out will be a full issue, and it'll be much closer to sort of like a Wizards magazine. Okay. Where it'll be big and thick. It's, I think they said it'll be something like 100 pages. You know, an actual full issue. This was just a sample, and I was reading through the articles in here. I was quite impressed with this. I have not spent a lot of time on the Bleeding Cool website, so I gotta preface it with that. So I'm not familiar with their, I don't want to say like level of journalism. I'm not used to their writing as far as what I would find out on their site, but what I found here in the book was very, 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 very neat and very interesting.
Now, it's interesting that you say that because you know, I get a lot of feeds from a lot of the comic news sites. Mm-hmm. And so most of this stuff felt like old news stories to me that I was looking at.
Yeah.
And so if you're out there on the web, this wasn't quite as much of a fit, particularly now, again, it's a zero issue. It's half as big as what it's going to be. But it felt like a lot of the stuff was, oh, here's just our rewrite of the preview synopsis for mm-hmm. these books, for this book that's coming out. I didn't read the entire Bleeding Cool that came out. It's just a lot of text.
Well, yeah. But yeah, if you don't like wall of text comics, well, then don't pick up a magazine full of articles, obviously. Well,
yeah, that's a magazine. It's not a comic.
Which is worth, very much worth pointing out.
Now, the other part of that is, yeah. I felt it was old news, and I'm wondering how they're going to do. Part of the reason Wizard died is because everything that they were coming out with
was coming online.
Already online, you know.
And they
4 weeks before the stuff that's in the comic in there.
And they addressed that in here as well. They said, you know, look, we're doing this backwards. We already have the website, and we're deciding we're going to go to print. What I think might be the case, and how you said it specifically is why I think this is important. I don't know so much if what they're doing in here is going to be about putting out news. That's what the web is for. The web is for the stuff that's
news.
The stuff that's just come out. The things that are going to be in here, I think are going to be the more in depth. The interviews, the discussions, the digging into stuff, including, which I thought was kind of funny, a gossip column about the comics industry itself.
Yeah, which I didn't see that actually being in there. I read the editor's note at the beginning of there, mm-hmm. which he talks about that. That was interesting stuff. That would make it something for me to look at. Part of what I loved about getting Wizard back in the day was they had the games and, you know, that's certainly stuff that they could have put online, but it was, yeah, they had lists, they had a quiz.
There was a lot of extra stuff.
And it was jokey. Yeah. And then they had in-depth interviews with creators and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, sure, there are lots of interviews that creators are putting online or that other news sites are putting up with creators online. Yeah, they're everything from YouTube videos to, you know, just straight up type transcripted interviews. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, if that's what they're going to be putting in here, the problem is people are going to go, well, why can't they just get it off the webpage? A lot of people are moving away. Now, I think comics is one of the unique places that people still want that book in your hand feel. Yeah.
The other thing too, if what I was told by the guys at our shop, if what they told me was correct, the things they're going to be putting in the magazine, they are specifically not putting on the website. It's going to be disparate, content.
Which will be interesting to see if they can actually pull that off.
Without people complaining and saying, look, if you're putting it there, why don't you put it over here?
Yeah.
Which, you pay for it here, you don't pay for it there.
Or how long is it going to be before it does wind up, you know, is it in the book, then the next issue comes out,
and then
the
stuff
that was on the previous issue is online. So it could completely stay off. It could eventually make its way online.
Mm-hmm. But they make the argument, you know, if our server crashes, you don't get us. But if you have the physical print, that physical print doesn't crash.
Google cache. if Google cached it.
Well, if the bath salt apocalypse gets any further, then we might not have an internet at all, which would make this little conversation kind of meaningless, come to think of it.
Let's
stay away from bath salts, folks. Drugs are bad, okay?
Yeah, let's go ahead and move forward with this. you talked about that. I wanted to talk about creator-owned heroes,
mm-hmm.
which is exactly what it sounds like. It's heroes that are owned by the creators, the yep. writers and the artists that made these books. This is the brainchild of Palmiotti and Gray. We talked about them earlier. We're both yep. fans of their work. They have, this is actually one of the things that we're looking at is they like the idea of the two-story comic where you've got, you know, or you got one story by one set of creators, a second story by another set of creators, and you get to read through both stories in one comic. They felt that that was always a good deal. They're not worried about the page counts as much in this book. What they're looking to do is showcase what they can do as creators and ideas that they had that were shot down by larger companies that are part of multimedia conglomerates that have to look out for their corporate image will not allow to happen. As creators and owning the material, they can do those types of stories.
Like so, this one called Erotica.
Well, that's actually a graphic novel that...
Oh, that's Dark Horse.
Of... Which is interesting because you mentioned that's printed by Dark Horse. Creator-owned Heroes is printed by Image. But that's Jimmy pointing out, hey, here's a book by somebody that you should go and check out. And after reading the two stories in here, they've got a bunch of columns. There's an interview with Neil Gaiman in here talking about how he got involved with writing and what you know he loves about writing and writing comic books. There's a discussion from the guy who did the cover layouts about, you know, how they decided to show the covers, and they eventually came up with doing a double cover. A cover featuring one with a minimal of the second story on one side, and then swapping those so that the cover that was minimalized on the one side is now the main title on the other side of the cover.
Mm-hmm.
That allows retailers to display the story that they feel is going to be most appropriate to their comic audience or show both covers. But they're not tied down to specific page counts. They're not tied down to it has to be X amount of episodes per story so that you know, you're going to run for six issues and then you're gone. You'll run till your story is done. And then if you've got another story, you can tell that. We may swap in another creator to mm-hmm. have them tell their story while you're working on whatever your next creation is. So it's just a great outlet for them to do their stuff. They also have an article in there on cosplay where they have two sisters who
twin sisters.
Yeah, they're twins and they're seamstresses. They've been sewing since I think it said they were 13. They're studying costume design for theater and they do cosplay and they actually do Trigger Girl 6 costume and they have photos of them in there talking about what they like about cosplay. Yeah, how they got involved with being able to do the Trigger Girl 6 costume for this inaugural issue of Creator-Owned Heroes. I think it's a great thing, and I actually think I got more out of this book than I did out of reading Bleeding Cool. Because, yeah, with the interview with Gaiman, hearing from the creators as to what's on their minds,
mm-hmm.
it's a direct line for them to go straight to us as the audience, when they don't have that line normally, they can cut through. They don't have the red tape that they have with a lot of other media outlets that they have to deal with.
So. I was kind of quiet during this because I was flipping through the book while he was talking about it. So,
did you like what you saw?
It's interesting. I mean, it's interesting in the idea of having, you know, comics and news kind of lumped together into one thing.
Yeah.
It's a novel format, and I wonder, I mean, really the big question is this novel format going to be able to get traction? Things kind of similar to this have existed in the past. I mean, we've seen comics that have, you know, the letters column and the other, you know, extra stuff in the back, an extra issue, you know, a mini story or something. I really wonder if that format is legitimate. I don't know. I'm very hesitant on it. I don't know if it'll survive.
I'll pick it up for the stories. That's why I picked it up. I didn't care about the interview with Neil Gaiman because there's lots of those.
Week there was not an interview, but a dedication that was written by Gaiman. They got some big news this week, but we'll talk about that a little bit later.
So you've got, you know, Gaiman's in the news in a lot of places. Now, mm-hmm. sure, they have their own questions that they're going to ask him, but some of the stuff, he even says, you know, I know you get asked this question all the time, but
Yeah. Right.
What advice do you have for somebody starting out?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I didn't care about the cosplay section that they were going to do in here, but I enjoyed reading it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I didn't know that, you know, all of the creators were going to have their own page of, you know, here's our information of, you know, what we want you to know about this project, about other things that we're working on. You know, Jimmy Palmieri has got his list of top 10 movies from 2012 that you need to go.
Yeah.
2011 you need to go see.
And they are keeping that in for every single issue. They're not doing this just as a number one. Like they'll, they're,
they have regular columns that they'll be writing. Now, they may, you know, I just don't have anything to say this week, so you're not going to see it. But, you know, it's going to give you a look behind on, you know, this is how I came up with the idea. Yeah. They show you all the different iterations they had of the cover. There was, I think, 5, including the one that they actually used.
Right.
So how did they come up with those ideas?
2 they used, technically.
Well, no.
As far as ideas of how they wanted to do it.
Yeah, the idea of how they were going to do to display that there are 2 stories in here. How do we display 2 stories on the cover?
Yeah.
Side by side. There were a couple of variants on that.
Mm-hmm.
One bigger than the other, laid in. Yeah. He talks about, as the graphic designer, how they did that. So it gives you a great look behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll see some of that with Bleeding Cool, but, you know. The gossip column is not quite what I'm looking for behind the scenes.
Well, and most people don't look for gossip columns in general, but they end up reading them anyways.
But, you know, maybe Bleeding Cool will give us some of that of talking with creators on how they came up with the concepts, how they refined them. You
know, why do they do the things they did and that kind of stuff.
How they work on their craft. All right. And enough with Bleeding Cool and creator-owned heroes.
Well, those were number ones.
We did
have, or number zeros, as the case may be.
No, creator-owned heroes was number one. Bleeding Cool was a zero. And you had another number one that you picked up this week.
Which is only a buck. And that's what makes it great. It was only a buck to pick it up. This was Extermination from Boom Studios. The concept on this one I thought was very interesting. It's a Batman-esque hero, almost like a Batman-Superman conglomeration analog as this weird sort of like super detective good guy fighting against this iconically cliched bad guy. But that's not even where the story starts. The story starts with the two of them on a motorcycle driving through this wasteland being chased by some type of a tech thing.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the bad guy and the good guy. It actually pops up on that first page and shows you. Yeah.
Yeah. So-and-so, super good guy.
Good guy.
So this guy's guy. Evil.
Yes.
With extra E's. I kind of chuckled a bit at that.
Yeah. Go ahead and grab
read this off here. Yes, Nox, Nocturnal Knight of Righteous Redemption.
Gee, that's not a description of Batman, is it?
The good guy. And the other one is the Red Reaper, menacing, megalomaniacal science tyrant. Evil!
Yeah.
Which, if you didn't hear that, obviously from me saying it, but you'd have to hear that in Invader Zim's voice to really make it work, because that's how I hear it every time I read it.
And this is really going for creating those archetypal heroes, the, like you said, kind of an amalgam of the Boy Scout Superman with Batman, you know.
The detective.
He refuses to kill.
Yeah, refuses to take a life.
He's, you know, he's almost always prepared for any situation. Mm-hmm. That's why he carries shark spray. And,
you know. Cause you never know.
Then you've got the villain and what force could cause them to team up together.
Right.
And it does a little bit of a back and forth.
Yeah, it flops back and forth time-wise.
Where you get to see back before the earth-shattering apocalypse event.
When they're going against each other.
Yeah, when they're fighting it as normal.
Mm-hmm.
What I felt about this was they pushed a bit too hard on the trope aspect of these characters.
Well, I think they did that on purpose, though.
I'm sure they did.
Well, yeah, because they wanted to make it that over-the-top sort of like, okay, this guy was an icon. This guy was an icon. Look, they've been introduced to. And if you think about it, there's even a conversation that they have. And I don't know if you noticed in the art style. In the future version, after whatever shit has hit the fan, the world's very brown, very gray. It's kind of withdrawn, subdued tones. And when they go into the past, it's much more vibrant, much more colorful. There's lots of stuff going on and blinking lights.
It's a bright superhero comic versus the gray post-apocalyptic one.
And they actually talk about it. Like, do you remember, you know, the good old days?
Yeah.
And one of them says, I think Nox is actually one that mentions, where he says it feels like a color-overloaded dream is how he remembers it. And it's exactly how it's portrayed as well, which is kind of interesting.
That's what they're going for. Reading some of the, you know, stuff that they had talking about the promotional material, in the promotional materials, they wanted this book to, they're going at it to examine the superhero genre.
Okay.
These archetypal characters and what it takes to break them from those archetypes. What will it take for Knox to kill?
Right.
To finally go that step.
Mm-hmm.
How evil is, you know,
Red Reaper?
Will he, you know, start shifting towards? It's not stuff that hasn't been explored before. We just had
certainly
Incorruptible and Irredeemable,
which are both Boom titles as well. So,
which are just ending that also examine that type of a story arc.
Well, we've talked about this before. This is the sort of that deconstructionist type of thing, which has happened ever since Watchmen. So,
which is also came out this week, was the first of the Before Watchmen books that we are not discussing, mainly because I had no interest in reading them. I don't think you had any interest in reading them. So we're not reading them.
But if you don't like it, you know, tell
there
us
are
why.
Some great creators working on this book. So I love Amanda Conner's art. I'm still not picking up Silk Spectre. Cook is working on books. I'm still not picking up.
I love Amanda Conner's artwork, but it almost seems like it would be out of place in the Watchmen universe. It doesn't feel right to me.
There's that too. Yeah. Apparently, you know, these people wanted to work on these books. You know,
more power to them.
Great. That's great.
I hope they're fantastic, and I'll be forced to get them in trade later because they're that awesome. But unless or until that happens, you ain't going to hear it here.
Yeah, I'm just not looking forward to those. So.
No.
But again, that was the deconstruction of superheroes with Watchmen. And
how is that not its own genre?
Extermination
now?
Is now coming up there with it. It really almost has. It has been done. You know, Astro City is another book that's very similar.
Yep.
And looking
Powers,
at it
I think is another
the
one.
Other side of mm-hmm. the, so there's plenty of them out there if you want to do it. I didn't particularly get sucked into Extermination. I enjoyed it,
but I
didn't feel like I needed to pick up the next issue.
It was definitely good for a buck. For the $1 for the issue, go pick it up. Go get it and read it. It's only a dollar. Decide for yourself. It's worth the value for you to make that determination.
Okay. So I think that brings us through all the indie books that we had this week.
Yep.
And that leaves us with the solo Marvel book that we both read.
It's not the only one.
Ultimate Spider-Man was very good as well.
AVX, but we were going to hold off on that one because of other plot related
to really
things
discuss the impact of that. We really wanted to let you read it and not spoil anything in it for you. Next month. 2 weeks when the next one comes out.
Oh, that's right. It's 2 weeks. Yeah. Well, no, 2 weeks is going to be Versus, right?
No, I think the next one comes out in 2 weeks and then Versus will also be out in 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
So.
All right. So come back then.
But back to the one book that we did read, which is Winter Soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And like many of the DC books, this is better in its second arc.
Yeah, definitely. Well, the first arc had gorillas with guns.
This
arc doesn't have
fun.
Any gorillas with guns. While entertaining and well fun, are they also the same reason that I dropped Flash off of my DC list too? They were going to start going to Gorilla Grodd. I'm sorry. Intelligent apes shooting guns at things. Not my cup of tea.
Okay. I can understand you don't like
entertaining. It.
It
makes me go, monkeys. Cause, you know, let's be honest. I'm a geek. Anytime a geek sees a monkey, they go, monkey. So.
Gorillas are not monkeys.
I don't care.
They're close enough.
I don't care. They're simian. All right. Screw it. I'll go with simian. Anytime we see a simian, we go, monkey. Because that's to us what a simian is. It doesn't matter if it's an ape, if it's a, you know, monkey, if it's a lemur. So, fuck it. Simian.
Okay.
Monkey.
So as we go into Winter Soldier, this I felt was certainly much stronger of a story. And it's dealing with the missing Winter Soldier. Now, Bucky, not specifically, but the missing soldier that was trained by the Winter Soldier, actually.
I'm trying to remember what they were calling them, though. I mean, they were sleepers, obviously, but they had a particular name for the program. I don't know if they mentioned it or not.
Yeah, well.
In here. I know they mentioned it before. I don't know if they mentioned it in here.
But Bucky is the Winter Soldier. As the Winter Soldier, he was kept in stasis except for when he was on missions or when he was training three other soldiers.
I thought it was four.
But I think it was three because they had two in the previous book and this is the third one that was missing.
Well, there are two
Bucky
in the previous.
The fourth.
Okay.
So
I was thinking there were two in the previous book, one that didn't survive the stasis.
Maybe
like,
that's
two
maybe
got
that's
crushed thing, and then there was the fourth.
Yeah.
And then Bucky.
So they're on the road looking for this guy. They realize he's escaped and he's now out in the wind.
Well, but more than that too is when these guys were coming out of stasis, there were particular procedures they had to go through to keep them from having the quantum leap style Swiss cheese brain. And this guy didn't get it. So not only is he a extremely well-trained Russian operative with Swiss cheese brain. Well, no, that pretty much is everything.
Not only is he extremely well-trained Russian operative.
He now has Swiss cheese brain. Yeah. And, so, you know, waking in a time that's completely different from what he's expecting.
Mother Russia is gone.
Yeah, Mother Russia is gone. He feels he understands what his continuing mission should now be.
Well, we're not so sure because he's got that Swiss cheese brain. So we're not. Yeah. So they're trying to figure out what he's up to, where he's going, what he's going to do. And meanwhile, we find out that
he got his stuff together. Well, no, even though it's not so much getting his stuff together, he gets activated.
Yeah, there is a special activation code that he does wind up very similar to in Serenity when River. River, thank you. Watching the TV.
It's not Summer. It's not Summer. It's not Summer.
Summer Glau is the actress.
Yeah, I know. Not the character.
Not the character. So you wouldn't have been. I don't know that we could count you as wrong for naming the actress. But
I know it wasn't right.
Summer Glau.
Well, at least I'm not calling her River Song because that's the next thing I'm going to do, and that would just totally put me in off my geek cred.
Okay, so when River gets activated, that's what happens in River the Tam? Middle of this book. I thought this was a great yes.
Okay, cool.
I thought this was a great read. It's Brubaker at the top of his game, writing this character. It's actually kept me from dropping the book. Mm-hmm. So,
which I've mentioned before that, I mean, Brubaker writes crime noir. That's his shtick. That's what he does. He does it well. I have been down on that genre for quite a while now. This is the first time that he or anybody in that genre has written something that has made me sit up and take notice. Because like, I was reading it going, yeah, this is what it's supposed to be like. This is how it should read and how it should be paced. There's finally a good, ooh, what's going to happen next?
Yeah.
Yeah. How is this going to fall out? How is the bad guy going to get, or how the good guy going to get out of this one?
And what's great with this is actually a great jumping on point. If you haven't been reading Winter Soldier and you want that kind of noir spy/soldier epic, because he's more than just a spy. He's a bit too much in there.
He's definitely super soldier. Much more overt than spy.
So
he was a spy, but now
he's definitely trying to keep his profile low since his death during Fear Itself.
Right.
Which is also the reason how he got out of the gulag when he was in Captain America as captain. So. All right. I give it a thumbs up. I think you said go ahead and give it a thumbs up.
I mean, I'm still not going to put it on my ad list, but I'll keep reading yours. Cause it's,
hey, look, you got a finite amount of cash, get together with your friends, say, okay, you pick up this book, I'm going to pick up that book, and we'll trade.
Yeah.
That way we both get to read everything. Yeah. All right.
And it's cost effective.
Let's go ahead and head on to the news.
Which we had not only a huge shared list this week, but also a lot of news that happened this week too. I think we'll probably have to try to skim through these, but trim. Yeah, trim it down.
First one, actually.
I'll let you have it. Go for it.
Goes back to, we were discussing last week how, hey, he's gay. Nobody cares. Well, that's not entirely true. The anti-gay group 1 Million Moms had put up on their Facebook page how much they disapproved of that.
I should point out, 1 Million Moms is not specifically an anti-gay group. They are anti-gay as part of their overall platform, but they're not anti-gay
and specifically. They have ties to other groups that are actually on the list of hate groups.
Yes.
They have ties. And they've come out against the gay. They came out against JCPenney when they hired Ellen DeGeneres.
Did you just say they came out against the gay?
Yes. when Ellen DeGeneres came out for JCPenney as their spokesperson, 1 Million Moms spoke up against that as well. So this is not new for them. On their Facebook page, they posted a rant. And in response, they had a whole bunch of Alan Scott Green Lantern fans come at them and say, screw you, we like Alan Scott, and if he's gay, good for him. Stop your hating.
Best of all, I'm going to steal this one.
Yeah, you go ahead and do this one.
Somebody actually posted a response to their post on Facebook with a altered version of the Green Lantern Oath. In brightest day, in darkest night, no intolerance shall escape my sight. Let those who worship ignorance might beware my power, Green Lantern's light. Which was fantastic.
It makes you feel good.
Actually, no, it was fantastic.
Fabulous.
Yep.
Since that happened, they were forced to take down their Facebook page because they were getting so much pro-gay comments on their site. They actually took down their Facebook page. And somebody else stepped in and said, well, if they're not going to be 1 million moms, we'll be 1 million moms. And we're going to make it a pro-gay lesbian transgender site. Yep. So 1 million moms Facebook page is now pro-lesbian, gay, bi, and transgender.
Yep.
And they're getting as many people as they can to sign up as, you know, in favor of that. They're also using it as a beachhead to prevent 1 million moms from getting back on Facebook.
Exactly.
And they're...
Although I think I heard they are back on Facebook with a new profile page, whatever.
I'm sure
they found their way on somehow.
But they're acting as a beachhead to make it more difficult for people that are searching for them to be able to join the hate group.
Exactly.
And maybe show some, you know, people
some
that
blockers,
are just curious about it to keep them from joining at all.
Yeah. So to the ungracious booting of 1 million moms from Facebook, I give a golf clap. Okay. Next up, Kathleen Kennedy has been named CEO of Lucasfilm and has said that she wants to make more movies, potentially indicating a Indiana Jones 5.
Which, this would not be directed by Lucas.
Correct.
So
and this makes me go...
Maybe Spielberg would step back in?
I don't know.
I think if they do another indie, they're going to have to try at least to get Spielberg involved. I'm sure there will be a producer. If not... And, you know,
he'd be a producer just in homage.
Well, Kathleen Kennedy helped Spielberg start Amblin Entertainment.
Right.
So we should mention
she's been a big player in this arena for a long, long time. I mean, you don't get named CEO of Lucasfilm by being some schmo off the street.
Now, Lucas is still keeping his, chairman of the board and, you know, president spots. He's just stepping down to make independent films. He doesn't want to make the blockbusters.
Which he said for a long time has kind of always what he's wanted to do.
Yeah. So he's going to step aside and do that because he wants to make, you know, smaller indie films, kind of like Red Tails that had come out. That's going to be the last of his big, big films.
Right.
I'm sure we'll still hear of stuff because it's Lucas.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And who knows, maybe Kathleen will give the fans their dream and make episodes 8, 9, and 10. Or 7, 8, and 9.
It would be interesting, but I don't know.
I don't know if she'd be able to, with Lucas still around, if she'd be able to pull that one off.
Yeah.
But indie is certainly on the table. And, yeah, of course, that's the they got Star Wars 1313 video game coming out.
Right.
There's talk of a live action TV show for Star Wars.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
And of course, they've got the animated cartoons as well. So.
Right.
Plenty of stuff coming out of Lucasfilm for all you Star Wars nuts out there.
Yep. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit here, on our list and do a short one. DC sales have started evening off, and they're just a little bit higher than they were pre-launch.
Yeah, that's from the 52. They saw a huge bump for that.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, for me, this is, exactly what I expected. They had a big bump, and levels have come back down.
Right, and now they're starting to kind of taper to where they're actually going to be.
Yeah, well, they're going to stay where, and not too far above where they had been previously. Now,
that's what I was going to say. This is evening out about the same place where it was pre-52.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is DC probably knew that it would take about this long, and it kind of smacks of, we know our timing. That's why Watchmen is coming out now.
Yeah.
Because they're expecting a big bump in sales from the before Watchmen titles that are hitting shelves now.
Guess what? Nope.
We'll have to actually see what the numbers are.
Yeah, that's true.
I haven't talked to the guys over at our comic shop.
Yeah, you know, just because we didn't like them doesn't mean a bunch of other people didn't.
Yeah, they're not our cup of tea, but I know there are people out there looking forward to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there may have been enough of those that DC will see a spike. You know, they're certainly going to get the media attention from it.
Well, and more than that, too, DC has been dropping a lot of books, but they've said they want to keep the same number of 52 titles in their library, so they've been introducing new titles in constantly, including... For new ones that they've just announced for September.
Yes. Well, September they're going to, launch a zero issue for all of the books that they're currently running.
Which that, I don't know if I agree with. I think that's a wrong move.
It's
going to
give you a little bit of information on the character paths that they haven't told you about in the year that, since the books have restarted.
But they've had a year. If there was something significant in the character background, it would have been brought up by now.
Well, we would hope.
I would hope. Or what's more likely the case going to be, they'll be ending their second arcs around that time, and so they'll do the zero issue, which will be, oh, look, here's something from their past that's going to pop up as the third arc.
Yeah.
Which means it'll be the same way across the board. And that, I feel, is a misstep.
All right.
Anyways.
They've been touting the Zero Issues for a long time. It's just going to be another book to buy in your favorite series. But they do have four titles that they've announced. We know Justice League International is ending.
Right.
Which means DC is currently, based on their announced titles, three titles over where they've wanted to be with their producing 52 comics.
Right.
So.
Well, I think they have some limited runs that are going to be ending, I think.
Well, Justice League International, if you want to call that limited run as well.
No, but there are some that were.
None of the 52 are limited. They have 52 ongoing titles. They've wanted to keep 52 ongoing titles.
Well, I'm talking about, like Shade. I don't know if Shade was touted as an ongoing. Shade started after the 52 relaunch.
Shade is not one of the 52.
Right.
Shade takes place in the 52 new universe, but it is not one of the 52 titles that are the 52 ongoing that DC is using.
I would actually hesitate to say it's even in the 52 universe because it's been a lot of a lot of recollection stories, so a lot of it's actually been spent in the past, and it's in different areas. So he has not had any interaction with any of the core heroes of the 52 universe.
But it probably is taking place in that world, even if it's not.
Likely, yeah.
Okay.
But it hasn't been explicitly intertwined.
So, but with the end of Justice League International, they're going to be bringing in four new titles.
Mm-hmm.
The first of which will make you happy, is called Talon, and is co-plotted by Scott Snyder.
Get it.
Yeah.
Schneider's name is on it. Pick it up.
Yep.
Pick it up.
James Tyrion will be doing the rest of the co-plotting and writing it. And, Gillum March will be the artist on there.
Yeah, don't care. Schneider, get it.
For those of you that are curious as to what it's actually about, aside from being written and co-plotted by Snyder.
Don't care.
Calvin Rose is a member of the Talons from the Court of Owls.
Mm-hmm.
He's rebelled against his masters and now is on the run from them. So, if that seems interesting story to you, it'll expand the Bat Universe a little bit.
Which I don't know how well the Night of Owls event has been received throughout the DCU.
I think overall it's been favorable.
Yeah.
I know I've had some people telling me, oh yeah, this book was really good. Yeah. That's not one of the books that they normally read or that.
Well, what's interesting though is I think people have felt that each individual book handled its
story,
its run in with it well, but I don't know if the Court of Owls as a whole has been really well accepted as this is a big, bad, nasty organization that is worth being feared.
Well, they're certainly trying to push for that in the, in the Bat books.
But it doesn't seem like it's been hitting, at least not in my opinion.
Oh. It certainly has worked in Batman because Snyder's been writing it and it's been woven into the mythology of that book so well.
Yes.
Now, how it's going to keep popping itself back up in surrounding books, not quite as much probably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, four or five issues back that you kind of saw it in All-Star Western. And I was like, oh, wait, this is going to be part of the.
Yeah.
That was
kind of like hindsight 2022. Because wait a minute. Oh, yeah. There's an owl.
Well, I remember looking through it, knowing that Court of Owls was coming up and going, oh, wait,
look at that.
This house has a bunch of owls in it. And it was before, it wasn't the crossover issue with Night of Owls that All-Star Western was running. It was three issues or something.
It was a nice little foreshadow of.
Yeah, it was a great foreshadowing of something that was coming up. All right. Moving on to the next title, Sword of Sorcery, which is
writer Christy Marks, who, if any of you were alive in the late 80s.
Remember watching television.
Yeah, which I would think probably most of our listeners probably are. Because those who were too
watching
young.
Watching American television, that is.
Yeah, well, any of those that were too young in the late 80s to be watching this, by my math, shouldn't be listening to this show. So.
Even so, they may.
Anyways. Christy Marks was the writer for Jem of.
And the Holograms.
Yeah, of Jen and the Holograms from the cartoon that came on after He-Man on Saturday mornings, or during the week, actually, now that I think about it.
Yep.
Because I remember that was always the cue for me to turn off the TV.
She's teaming with artist Aaron Lopresti for Sword of Sorcery. And it's interesting that she was the writer and creator of Gem, because she's going to be working on Gemworld.
Which... And, she'll be working on the character of Amethyst,
yes.
Who is in fact the last princess of,
Lost princess of Gemworld.
Yes. A little vowel swap there. Lost princess of Gemworld, who's being hunted by her aunt. So it's a kind of a Snow White and the Huntsman kind of thing going on here.
this is great for DC because they've been criticized for not having enough strong female characters, mm-hmm. particularly leads in their own books. They've got, you know, Catwoman.
Yep.
They've got Wonder Woman. They've got Birds of Prey, which is an all-girls team.
Right. They now have World's Finest, which just came out.
Yep. They have Batgirl.
Mm-hmm.
World's Finest is a recent addition for that.
So you could argue that Stormwatch is in fact led by a female-ish robot thing.
Yeah.
But I would say, unfortunately, those, Apollo and Midnighter kind of usually take the role on those books more than anybody else.
Of those, they don't have very many iconic. You know, Batgirl is iconic. Wonder Woman is iconic.
Mm-hmm.
Fans of Justice League will recognize Black Canary from Birds of Prey.
Yes.
Catwoman is kind of is iconic with.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Insinuated with Batman. Not necessarily on her own, but she's certainly tied with Batman for a long
time.
Yeah. This gives them another character that they can push out there, as a strong female, which a lot of people have been calling out for.
Mm-hmm.
From DC.
And where this will actually fit in with the 52 world in general seems, I would almost think, a little bit shaky. Because it even says here, set in a post-apocalyptic wasteland.
Well, that's the backup story.
Yeah,
that's the Tony Bedard and Jesus says post-apocalyptic backup story.
The Monstrous Warrior Bayo. Oh, okay. Yep. Sorry, my mistake.
So, now... Even so, it will take place in the 52. It'll be interesting to see how it does all fit together.
Mm-hmm.
Gemworld.
I wonder what family of books they'll end up tying that in with. I wonder if she'll end up being Edge.
I'm thinking that's going to be Edge.
Yeah,
that's
probably.
Something I know you're going to be stoked about, and you'll definitely be picking up, is written by Dan DiDio with art by Brent Anderson, and mm-hmm. that is The Phantom Stranger.
Sorry about that. I had to wipe some drool off my mic. No, Phantom Stranger, especially since seeing the quick little, cameo he had in the Free Comic Book Day issue.
Right.
I am just gnawing at the bit to see where this goes.
And his
because,
appearance in, I think it was Justice League.
With
Pandora.
Yeah. Right. I didn't know anything about Phantom Stranger as far back as Blackest Night. When, you remember they did the short runs of books that they brought back during Blackest Night very briefly for one issue? Phantom Stranger is one of the ones they brought back, and I thought that was a fantastic issue. It was really, really good, which hooked me on the character, and I haven't seen a whole lot about him since. Other than going back and picking up things like Infinite Crisis and rereading Kingdom Come and things like that, where the Stranger does appear and how truly massive of a character he was in the old DC mythos, to see him now getting his own title and written by DiDio, who the other things that he's done I've been pretty happy with as well.
Okay.
Two thumbs way, way up. I am all about that book.
So, yeah, and this has definitely got to be a key... I can see this being a key book in the Trinity War that's coming up.
And I think this next one will be as well.
Also apparently going to be a key book for the new 52.
Just in general.
And will actually play into those zero issues that we're going to be reading come September is Team 7, written by Justin Jordan with Jesus Moreno on art.
Who, I gotta say, those two names aren't real familiar to me.
Jesus Moreno, I'm familiar with his art.
But Justin Jordan as a writer, I don't think I've seen before.
At least not
that I can think of. We'll have to look him up later to see what he's done, but. Yeah. Anyways, that's not for here now.
This is interesting for me because of who the team consists of.
Yeah.
Which, yeah.
Let's go down the list and we'll match up the ones that we know about.
Yeah.
And the ones that we're kind of fuzzy on, we looked up earlier and we'll bring those up later. Yeah. Diana Lance, who
Black Canary.
Yeah, Black Canary. Amanda Waller, who we've already seen
in Suicide Squad. Yes.
Dealing with her own group.
Well, she's running the Suicide Squad. You've got Dinah Lance, who's running the Birds of Prey.
Right. Steve Trevor, who's been the handler for the Justice League. and now the ex of Wonder Woman, which obviously makes him a little bit jaded. John Lynch and Alex Fairchild, we had to look up. We didn't know who those were. So let's skip those for right now.
Okay.
Cole Cash, who is the Grifter.
Yep. And Slade Wilson, who is Deathstroke the Terminator.
Right. Who, you know what? I just realized, that is the only character Shade has ever interacted with in the New 52. Cause Deathstroke in the first issue of Shade, kills the Shade. Chops up into a bunch of little pieces. And then Shade pops up.
Him.
Yeah, terminates him. He's like, sorry, it's just a job. Splits. And then Shade, you know, comes out of the shadows and is like, dude, I've been around for millennia. You really think that's going to work? Anyways. So the two that we didn't know, it turns out were both from the Wildstorm universe. So they're between the two of them and, Grifter, they're going to be, you know, rather heavily, investing the Wildstorm characters and Wildstorm universe into this new, almost kind of a key point book.
Well, what's interesting is these are people that are behind the scenes in the current universe, but are, for them, except for Slade, pretty much straight humans. Fairchild does have some psionics. Whether they'll keep that in here or not is questionable. You know, but these are kind of the forerunners to the superheroes, and it seems like they're placing this book to be what happened before the superheroes arrived. How did they build themselves into characters?
I would almost say
step into the roles that they currently exist in during the DC universe.
Yeah. Well, these guys are actually, and even says this team is being composed as a countermeasure from when Superman, who was the, for we know the first in the DCU to emerge, that this team was created as a countermeasure to his emergence.
So this is taking place 5 years ago as Superman's emerging, the first issue of Action Comics.
Right.
From which New 52
is That's interesting to note because Cole Cash and his tenure as Grifter has occurred in the 5 years since the formation of the Justice League, or the 2 years whatever the fuck it is.
Well, while they're touting this as a series, I think it's more of a maxi series, and it will run maybe, I'm thinking 12 issues, and then they'll probably cut it off, which will. At the end of it is when Diana goes to start Birds of Prey. Amanda goes and takes over and does the.
I don't know. This could be the. This could be the proto genesis of the new Secret Seven.
Yeah.
Well, or Secret Six. No, I don't
see that. No, because it's too much goody goody in here. Diana Lance is here. Amanda Waller takes on Suicide Squad. She operates in the gray area on the side of the law, though.
Okay.
Steve Trevor works for the Justice Department.
Right.
A pilot in the Navy. Yeah. Or Air Force.
Cole, I'm guessing at this point will be he'll be acting as the soldier. Which
Cole
he was before he becomes Grifter.
Slade will probably also be a standard soldier. Lynch and Fairchild, not sure what their roles will be.
Yeah, I don't know.
This seems like it's how they came to be in their current roles in the DC universe. And I can certainly see this kind of being a maxi series of how they got to be in charge of the organizations that they're running in
DC. Yeah.
So.
Oof, okay. Big stuff. And, there's one last thing to mention. Unfortunately, it's on a down note, but, the very prolific and very well-known science fiction writer Ray Bradbury had passed away this week at the age of 91. So I gotta be honest. 91. Hey, that's a hell of a run. Good job, dude.
Yeah.
You done good. Of course, there was a lot of outpouring at the news of his passing. Yeah. One in particular, Neil Gaiman did reposted something he had written about Ray Bradbury for his 90th birthday just last year. And his reposting of that got a lot of attention shortly on the heels of the commencement speech that he did. And I'm trying to think of what the college was where he did. I want to say Stanford. I'm not sure if that's correct or not.
Yeah, I saw somebody on Reddit talking about how he saw Ray Bradbury speak. And he's like, I went there under protest to go see him speak.
And Bradbury or Gaiman?
Bradbury.
Oh, okay.
And when I left the speech, if I'd have known now that he was going to be there, I would crawl to get there if I had to.
Yeah.
He was that magnetic, and there are, you know, some of Bradbury's speeches have been posted online. You can see that stuff. Somebody said, one of the funnier things that I saw posted about it was, they did not release the cause of death. However, I think it has something to do with the sun revolving around the sun 90 plus times.
Yeah.
So, which, being a sci-fi author, I think he
would have appreciated
kind of the poetry in that. Well, for those of you not familiar with any of his work, you may not be able to tie it to the name. The Illustrated Man.
Fahrenheit 451.
Yep. And, Something Wicked This Way Comes.
The Martian Chronicles.
Yeah. Yeah. He's had an indelible mark on sci-fi.
Oh yeah. The guy was 91 years old. I mean, he was writing stuff when current sci-fi writers were just discovering sci-fi, and they were probably discovering his books.
Yeah, a lot of it was. He showed you that sci-fi, while in a science fiction setting, was still about people and humans and their reactions.
Bradbury, along with guys like Asimov, who I mentioned last week,
right.
I mean, these were some of the forerunners of modern sci-fi and the modern ideas of what it is that makes a science fiction book. So his passing is a great loss, unfortunately, but for the time he's had here and the work he put out while here, we have nothing but the greatest amount of thanks for him.
And, we've got plenty of his work to reread. And, if you haven't read his books, go out there, check them out. There probably are now movies that are trying to be made.
There's already been movies of
Fahrenheit 451 has a movie.
Yeah, yeah. I want to say Martian Chronicles, I think, did too.
So I'm sure with his passing, there'll probably be Hollywood will try a resurgence of it.
Vultures.
Yes. Well.
But then again, you know what? Anything that gets interest for his work out there, I'm actually kind of okay with.
It's quality work. And so the more we can promote quality over just quantities is certainly a good thing.
Absolutely. You go to the bookstore, look for his stuff. You'll find it in the classic section.
You'll find it in the sci-fi section, where they had to invent the section for him.
Yeah. It'll be in sci-fi or it'll be in classics. I personally believe they belong in classics. Yeah.
I don't know. He might enjoy the fact that they're in sci-fi.
Yeah. Maybe. Right. Anyways, that is it for this week. Not too bad. We didn't do too bad.
We actually kind of got
for all the stuff we had. Yeah. Wow.
And for cutting into a couple of things that we actually had said, no, we're not going to do. We got right back on track. So,
I'm actually halfway through. I thought of something. I was like, shit, you know what? I should have brought that up because that actually has to do with some of the other stuff we were talking about. And I'm tempted to bring it up now, but. I was going to bring up, I'll go ahead. It was in Stormwatch. It was at the very end. And I talked about Moonlighter and Apollo kind of being at the forefront of that book. In this week's issue, you can tell something's bugging Apollo. He's pissed about something. He's taking it out on basically anything and everybody around him. By the end of the book, what eventually you begin to realize is Stormwatch operates in the shadows more so than any other organization. They're in the shadows of the shadows. Like, they see shadow organizations like the Suicide Squad and they go, how cute. So, because of that, I mean, they are unbelievably covert. At the end of the issue, Apollo explains why it is that he's been so tied up in knots in the whole issue. And he describes it as, I grew up in the Midwest with a conservative family being told that the things that I was feeling and the way that I was wrong and I had to hide it. And I had to hide it for so long until I met you, talking to Midnighter, until I met you and I could be myself. I could be on the open. I could be who I am and not hide it. And now because I'm a part of this group, I'm hiding again. And it just grates against me, and I don't want to hide anymore.
Well, for those that aren't in the know, Apollo and Midnighter are lovers.
Yeah, are a gay couple in the DCU.
Yeah, they are gay. They are out. They were gay in Wildstorm.
Yes.
And so it's one of the things that a lot of fans were curious if DC would continue with, and they had said that they would continue with it. And for all the attention that Alan Scott got, they've been in the DC for a while.
From the very beginning.
But they're also not the iconic characters that a Green Lantern is.
Alan Scott Green Lantern is?
DC has taken some knocks for making it Alan Scott. And not, you know.
I was surprised to hear that there were guys coming into our local comic shop saying they were completely up in arms over it. And I think I mentioned this last week, you know. But they were saying, you know, I'm up in arms over it, but not because he's gay. I'm up in arms over it because they did it to Alan Scott. Well, dumbass, if you're upset about them doing it to anybody, it's because he's gay, jackass. Congratulations, well, you're still homophobic.
I can't completely agree with that, because there's a character that you really like and you don't want to see that character change.
Change at all.
And
all right.
I'll give you that some of them had that. It wasn't a homophobic reaction. It was they love that character. They didn't want to have that change. Now, okay, here's the interesting thing, though. Aside from who the significant other is, there won't be a big change in the character.
Which I would be willing to say. Imagine a father to a son. If your son is gay, and that, you know, it's a change, it's not what you expected, you're still gonna love him just the same.
That's what we would hope.
So there you go.
There are families where that doesn't true. Happen.
True. But if your favorite character is Alan Scott, and now he's changed, he's gay, love him anyways.
Yes.
Cause he's your character.
And you know what? It doesn't change who he is as a person. You know, he's still-
Or as a hero, for that matter.
Well, he's a person first, and then a hero. And the person defines who he is as a hero.
But you don't write comic books about people. Just ordinary, regular, random people. If you do, they're boring-ass books.
You've got Spiegelman with Mouse. You've got...
somebody that experienced a very specific
traumatic
part of human history that not everybody did. That's special.
Yep. Art School Confidential is about the experiences of the person at the school.
There are
ways to write about regular people.
We don't see a whole lot of slice of life stories in comics, though. At least not over here in the States.
Not mainstream comics.
I'm bringing up manga. Screw you, Damien.
Oh, you mean about all those kids that go to school and have all the adventures at school?
No. There's guys that are just regular business. There's mangas in Japan about a businessman. Just a regular run-of-the-mill dude and his day-to-day life. Why they enjoy reading that, I don't know, but evidently it's a big genre over there.
But then again, we have movies about that type of stuff too. Usually there's a big event that transpires.
Yeah, that's true. But
there's not necessarily that out of the ordinary.
Tearjerker dramas and shit like that. A day in somebody's life. Well,
Aaron Brockovich is about a reporter.
Steve Carell recently, Dan in Fast Forward.
Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. You know, it's a political drama. I'm trying to remember what the Michael movie that starred Clooney. Michael Collins.
There's
that. There's
Dan in Real Life. That's what I was trying to think of. The Steve Carell one, yeah.
Then there's, Hanks in the movie about so-and-so's war. I can't even think of the title.
Big. That's not really slice of life, is it?
No, that
didn't happen to everybody?
Yeah, I got my own I went to the Zoltan machine.
Yeah. Became an adult and then turned back into a kid, and then we never turned into adults after that.
Yeah, but it was a statutory rape. He was 12.
Huh.
Yeah, that just messed with you. He was 12. She was 30.
Why did you have to go and do that to my childhood? I think you may
completely changes your opinion of that movie, doesn't it?
I think you just raped my childhood the same way that she raped him.
Well, we could discuss a scene that happens in Harbinger, about that.
I would say, but let's not, because we've talked enough about rape at the end of this episode, and I think that's a good way for us to say it's time for us to stop. We need to stop talking now.
I think so. I think we've carried it above and beyond that threshold. So,
if you want to contact us and yell at us for all the rape talk we had at the end of this episode, you can find all of our contact information at about.me/comicbooktesseract.
For all the specifics, our website, you can find us at thecomicbooknerd.com. They got news articles and events going on over there all the time. Check out thecomicbooknerd.com. Facebook, we are facebook.com/comicbooktesseract. Google+, we are gplus.to/comicbooktesseract. Find us on Twitter. Justin is Felix T. Cat. That's with a K and two T's. I'm at J. Polieff. Or you can go ahead and contact us by email. comicbooktesseract@gmail.com. Or leave us a voicemail. 50Tesseract. That's 508-377-3722. We also accept text messages at that number. So go ahead, text us, email us, or send us a friend on Facebook or Google+. And on that note, we'll go ahead and see you next week when we step inside the Tesseract.